Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. Also, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Tuesday, November 13th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks. Snap-Lock Chicken Coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double-wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze.
Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you so much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Wow, it's our first day back after a pretty long road trip. At least it really felt like it was a long road trip, but it was very successful. We had a great time. I met a lot of great people and was really energized and, let's see, what's the word I'm looking for? I've used it several times. Encouraged and just excited about the ALBC, what they do, and all the breeds that they're about, the heritage breed birds. So it was a great trip. We'll talk about that here in a minute. But I want to say welcome. I hope you all had a fabulous weekend, and thank you very much for joining us. Back it is Tuesday. It is the second Tuesday of the month, November the 13th. And today we'll welcome Jeanette Barringer with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. She'll join us about a half past the hour. She'll run up until about 1 p.m. It'll be a little bit shorter show today. I'm sure she is worn out from the awesome annual conference that she helped set up and organize up there in Cary, North Carolina this past weekend. It was awesome. So she'll be joining us about half past the hour. Have a lot of exciting news that's coming up here with Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Really exciting. But let me just tell you a little bit about the trip. We headed out on Wednesday, heading up there to Cary. We stopped in Florence overnight, had lunch with a fan, which was absolutely awesome. We met him last time we were there in Florence coming through town, and he is such a great guy, and and had some questions, picked our brain. We broke bread together, and it was a great time. We had a big group last time we passed through Florence, and he knows most of them, and they were not available. Of course, I gave him like short notice, but it was great to meet the fans when we were on the road. And then Thursday, we did have the radio show with Richard Frutenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. That was a great radio show. And then we got up there to Cary, North Carolina, and we just had a fabulous time. We got checked in that morning, Friday morning. The event started, kicked it off, two workshops during the morning. There was the Getting Started with Backyard Poultry workshop taught by yours truly. Had a pretty good crowd for that and real nice folks. And I got a lot of questions answered and covered a lot of material in that 3.5 hours. In the conference room next to ours, there was a rabbit workshop going on, if you're into rabbits, and that had a great turnout as well. And I'm sure a lot of people learned about heritage breed rabbits in that session. And then in the afternoon, Pat Foreman came in my room at 1 o'clock. She had a session all about how, feeding your flock, food does not necessarily have to come in a bag. And so, and chickens and gardening, of course, her expertise. So she was there that afternoon, and I'm not sure exactly what was in the other conference room that afternoon, but we kicked off the first day of Friday with some pre-conference workshops, which was fabulous, and met really a lot of people. Yeah, Pat, very funny, Bard Rock. But so yeah, we had a good one, Bard Rock. That's nice. And we said in the chat room. So but yeah, so that day was great. And then Friday night, everybody just started coming in, and we kicked it off in the ballroom with a wonderful kickoff banquet. The food, oh my gosh, the food was absolutely wonderful. All the meat we had was provided by American Livestock Breeds Conservancy members who had local farms, heritage breed. We had two different types of heritage breed pork. We had heritage breed lamb and some chili. We had heritage breed chicken. Oh my gosh, we had a beautiful salad. We had apple pie, pecan pie. We had wonderful homemade cornbread to go with the chili. Let's see, we had, strawberry shortcake for dessert as well, if you wanted that. Oh my gosh, the food was absolutely incredible and wonderful that night. So it was very exciting, great banquet, probably about 150 people filled the banquet hall, the typical banquet round tables. And we had a great time. The guest speaker that night during the banquet was the founder of Seed Savers Exchange. We interviewed her. We'll talk about the radio show in a minute. But that was really fabulous and uplifting about the seeds and how the story behind her company is amazing. Her great-grandfather, her grandfather, and then her and her family, and now the business of over 70 employees. They've got seeds saved. And their seed bank there on location, they have 24,000 varieties off location. And then they have more seeds in the big seed vault out in Norway, the big underground Arctic seed vault. They've got a bunch of seeds out there as well. A fabulous story, and it was just so inspiring to hear. I mean, that there's 4,800 apple trees that are no longer in existence. They're gone forever. These just beautiful, juicy, tasty, sweet apple trees and apples that are just gone from the planet Earth now. It's sad and heartbreaking of this. The seeds are gone. She talked about having everything organic and all the heirloom varieties and how she has to use special caution being in Iowa. Where they're located, because of all the GMO corn crops. I mean, she said the whole state's practically a GMO corn crop. So how they have to take very special care and caution to make sure that their heirloom corn varieties are not infiltrated, because corn is pollinated by air by the surrounding. So they have special techniques that they actually do that. Let's see. Oh, I see that your question. I was like, wait a minute. So that was very inspiring. Then we had a silent auction that took place to raise money for ALBC. There was a special award given out to the gentleman who's been saving and has saved and developed and continued to develop the Marsh Tacky horse, which fabulous story behind that. Got to shake his hand and meet him. It was a really, really great time and very inspiring and uplifting regarding the ALBC and the great works they do. So it was fabulous. So I would love for all of you, because they do so, and I saw it firsthand this weekend. That's why I was so inspired and uplifted by this group. I met and talked for really a long time with the new executive director of the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and talked about different ways we could work together and increase membership. Really one of the fastest growing groups that they would be, of course, interested in having members would be the backyard chicken people. The homesteaders, we understand, the breeders, the heritage breed homesteaders and farms for profit and even in personal farms growing food for yourselves. But we really talked about how we could reach the backyard folks and how important it is, even if it's just something as simple as getting them to join up. It's $35 a year, and let me tell you, the people always say, well, what do I get back for that? I'm always getting something in the mail from them, catalogs, a current catalog of heritage breed animal breeders, the breeders list, all the works that they're doing, different ways I can participate in conferences and things that are going on in my area. It's tremendous. $35 a year, let me tell you, for what you get, in my opinion, is fabulous. But the most important thing is, and you can opt out. If you want to save the trees and not worry about all of that, all the paperwork mailed to you, you can opt out of that and save them a little bit more money from that if you're not interested in a lot of that. And maybe your interest is saving the animals and saving these heritage breeds. So it was pretty darn awesome. And it was absolutely wonderful. So let's see. So that was perfect. So that was a good time and really learned a lot. And today we got Jeanette Berenger with the ALBC coming on talking turkey. Today we're talking turkeys. Yep, she's going to tell us all about some heritage breed turkeys and works that they're doing. And that'll be coming up about half past the hour. So what a great uplifting trip it was. Definitely looking forward to doing more work with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy in the future. While I was up there, while we were in the car, brainstorming about, you know, our sponsors and how awesome they are, our listeners, how we want to help you save money, and how we want to support our sponsors, I thought, you know what, Jen, we need to do this. This is cool. I'm gonna make the announcement. And we need to have a, you know, everybody seems to go out and love Black Friday. When we go, the occasional, we never have much money to do anything with it, but I'll go and people watch. So entertaining to people watch. In fact, for several years when our folks would family would all get together, they'd go to a particular mall. I would go and not spend a dime. I'd maybe get one of those cinnamon pretzels or something and sit there. But I would find normally my spot in the mall was this big leather chair. They would have them scattered out through the mall for customers could sit and relax. And I would find me a big leather chair right outside the Coach the store, the little department store there in the mall, the Coach purse place, and I would sit there and I would just look at the people that are going in there looking at spending their money on anywhere from $200, $300, $1,500, $2,000 handbags. And I would just sit there, regardless if the economy was good or bad or whatever, I would just sit there and look at these folks. And you would see them go in, and the way they would, you know, you'd have full view inside the store sitting there in that leather chair. I'd love to people watch on Black Friday. And seeing people spend their money on these $2,000 pocketbooks and the people who are doing that. But what was more amazing were these kids. I mean, we're talking like 9-year-old, 12-year-old, 16-year-olds. And from the time you see them walk in the store with mommy and daddy and then starting to pick out purses and coin purses and all these things that are hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and you hear the excuse, oh, mommy, I won't have to have a purse until I go to college, or this will last me all the way through college. They're built so good, and they're so nice, and it's only $900, but think of the investment. Think of how long it's going to last. I won't have to buy another purse until I'm out of college. Literally, some of these conversations were priceless. And then seeing them get in there and pick them, and then mom shaking her head no, or dad shaking her head no, his head no, and then the disappointment on the 12-year-old girl that she can't have this $900 purse, and she just, you know, just almost in tears because she wants this $900 pocketbook to take to middle school to show off to her friends. So a lot of times, Black Friday was, for me, people watching. And that's normally what I did while everybody else was shopping in my family, is I would find that big, nice, leather, comfortable chair right outside the Coach purse place and just watch some of the folks that are in there buying these $900, $1,200, $1,500, $2,000 purses, and then the kids that wanted them so bad so they could take them to take them to their middle school and show off this $900 pocketbook. And sometimes they had to settle, literally, I watched this happen, settle for a little coin purse for $90, for like a little coin purse that they then could keep in their pocketbook so they could pull that out and say, oh, look, I have a Louis Vuitton this or a Coach this or that or whatever, even though if it was a $90 coin purse. They kept it. They had to have something from the Coach store. So that was always entertaining. But I thought to Jen, I said, you know what? I don't think anybody does a Black Friday for chicken stuff. I mean, all these chicken fans across the country that love, you know, chicken stuff, they're going to need heated waterers. Maybe they want, you know, a discount on coops. Maybe, you know, spring's coming up, incubators, maybe some medicine, maybe some probiotic, maybe some, vitamins and electrolytes, all this cool stuff. But, you know, not that I know of that anybody's ever really done on a wide scale. Surely maybe one company will say, hey, we're having a Christmas sale or we're having a Black Friday sale, but not across the board. So I thought, Jen, this is a great opportunity and a great idea, and I can tell you right now, honestly, but I guess it's what I get paid to do, it's becoming the very much the large task and large project that it is. Lots of phone calls, lots of organization, all these different companies that have different e-commerce sites. Some can do codes, some can't do codes, some are just going to change the price for that day, some will change the price for the weekend. So we're trying to contact all of our sponsors to see who wants to participate and what specials are going to be. And then we're going to go, of course, yep, and My Pet Chicken's going to do some things as well. So this coming, not this coming, but the Black Friday, we've called it and we've nicknamed it, it'll be kind of with chickens, Black Australorp Friday. That's what we're calling it, Black Australorp Friday. And actually, to be honest with you, because of request, I heard from somebody that said, well, I work in retail and I have to work all day Friday, so hopefully the deals will last over the weekend. So I heard from someone else, well, my check really won't go in till Saturday, so I hope it does go through the weekend. So I'm pushing and hoping that most of our sponsors will do this sale through the weekend. It'll start on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, and then go through Sunday night, I guess midnight, and then Monday they'll get in and hopefully appreciate all the sales that they got. But I'm just kind of going through my mind the companies that I know I've confirmed with, that I've talked to. I can't elaborate on some of the deals yet, but I know that Crazy K Farm is going to have a huge discount on their Hen Saver hen aprons, their hen saddles, a huge discount on those. I know that Brincy is going to have a discount on a couple of their incubators, okay? I know that, and maybe even a couple of other products. Let's see, I know that My Pet Chicken, I've talked to Derek, are going to have a few items that are going to go on a big discount for Black Friday. Let's see, who else have I talked to? Oh, my goodness. Trying to go through here and think. Right now, I'm trying to work on getting Hatchery to come on board with maybe a discount on some chicks, some baby chicks, black Australorps in particular, but since it's Black Australorp Friday. But so just wondering to so what we're going to do is I hope to have all this finalized, whether it be coupon code you have to use or if they're just going to change the price on these particular items across the board and not have to worry about a code. It may be different with the different sponsors. But I hope to have everything finalized by this Friday. And so then on Monday, I can really start promoting it hot and heavy with all the information and what products are going to go on sale and when you can start purchasing them from the comfort of your own home, right from the internet. You just go to their website and then order, and we're really pushing for, you know, because most of my or a lot of my sponsors have the 10% off coupon when you use the coupon code Whisper. A lot of them honor that, whether you buy on the phone or you buy online. When you use the coupon code Whisper, not Whisperer, but when you use the coupon code Whisper, you get 10% off. That's at RandallBurkey.com. That's at Brincy.com. Other places as well, but also at critter-cages.com, so lots of places. So, but just to make things, and that'll always be good, but we're hoping that there'll be some special codes for some deep discounts on some products, and we want to do these on products that you are going to want. It doesn't make any sense to do products that you're not interested in or don't want. So we're really trying to – I'm trying to work with these sponsors to say, hey, look, I've heard from people. They want a heated waterer. They want a heated waterer base. They want this. They want some medications. They want some electrolytes. They want some probiotics. They want Oxine. They want Hen Savers. They want some – they definitely want chicks. So we're definitely looking forward to that. So hopefully there'll be some products that you will want on our Black Australorp Friday special event for some huge discounts on products you're going to want regarding chicken. So the day after Thanksgiving, you can really, really, really do a lot, and I mean a lot, save some money, but do a lot of your early Christmas shopping. Bye.
All righty. So there you have it. So very, very excited about Black Australorp Friday coming up, the Friday after Thanksgiving. Most of the deals we'll have will run through the weekend in case you don't get paid till Saturday or you have to work on the weekend, so you can sit in the comfort of your own home and get a lot of these great chicken products from all of our sponsors. And so, yeah. Black Australorp Friday. Mark your calendars. The Friday, of course, right after Thanksgiving. It'll probably run through the weekend, most of the sales. But right now I'm looking for some deals on some chicks. And as soon as the radio show's over, I will be on the horn. It has actually become quite the task to try to coordinate and get this done for Black Australorp Friday. Hope you all appreciate it, but I want to save you some money and want to please our sponsors with some great sales for to get them through the end of the year. All righty. Like I said, today is the second Tuesday of the month, and so we have Jeanette Berenger with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy on. We already talked about the awesome annual conference that was this past weekend in Cary. So uplifting, so inspiring, so awesome to meet like-minded folks and the work that they're doing to really see firsthand. It's one thing to have Jeanette come on the show once a month. But to really talk with these folks and to talk with the executive director and his excitement about having this new position and increasing membership and increasing the great works that they're doing was so worth the trip. It was absolutely awesome. Very excited to be associated with such a great organization as the ALBC. So with that, let's go ahead and give a great big hand to our guest today, which, of course, is Jeanette Berenger. Hey, Jeanette. Joining us.
Yeah, hey, how you doing? Long time no hear, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure that you're 10 times more worn out than me after all the work that y'all did, but it was a great trip, but it's always good to get back home, and I'm sure all of the staff there is just absolutely just crawling on hands and knees going, oh, it's over, but it was such a success, and I know y'all have probably already started planning for next year, which I also hear is going to be really in the same location there in Cary, North Carolina, so I'm going to have to mark my calendar as soon as it's announced, and I will have to make my room reservations a little earlier. Of course, it was one of those things you live and learn, and as traveling as much as I do, sometimes I just procrastinate to the last minute, maybe get a good deal here, a good deal there, a price line or something, but I was about a month late getting that special room rate y'all had reserved, which was really a special rate because when I called them up and I was like, I'm coming up doing a workshop and ALBC and all this stuff. And they were like, okay, well, that room will be so-and-so and so-and-so. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. And they're like, oh, no, that expired back on October 7th. So, but nonetheless, it was awesome. So I'll know next time to make sure when I start, we'll start promoting the event earlier. And myself, I'll have to book my room a lot earlier, and I'll have to make sure that I make a special note to do that so I can get that special rate because that was a really nice facility and a great hotel. And even though we were very, very, very close by, it would have been nice to just have Jen and Caleb just come down the elevator and voila, right into the conference room or same here. But, man, the food was awesome there. All the heritage breed meat, the pork and the chicken and the lamb, all of that was just fabulous. The food was tremendous. I hope y'all did well with the silent auction and got lots of great members. So, but congratulations on a super successful event. And I know y'all are tired, but have probably already started working on next year's event. So I want to first say thank you for joining us today because I know you're probably exhausted as well. But I think we're going to talk about turkey today. Let's talk turkey.
Yeah. Thanks for the kudos on the conference. Yeah, we're all still kind of reeling. Most of us took yesterday off and, did whatever to kind of get back into the right frame of mind, to get back in the office and but we're all back today and starting to sort through everything. But I thought today, talking about turkey, since my goodness, next week is Thanksgiving. I just can't believe it. And the thing is, everybody's got eating turkey on their mind right now. And actually what we have on our mind is ordering poults for next year. We start thinking about it this time of year because there is a lot of planning involved with getting poults, and because the demand has been so high for heritage turkeys that it's getting harder and harder to find, ample supply of quality birds. And so I like to tell people to start thinking about getting your orders in now in November and December in order to get poults for the springtime. And also for people that are breeding turkeys, it's around December where you start, November, December, you've made your selection on what birds you're going to keep and what birds are going to be breeders. And starting around December, you know, you start hands off with the birds and let them start settling in and pairing off and getting ready to get ready for the upcoming breeding season. And as you know, there are a number of turkey breeds that are on our list, and with the conservation priority list, we list a number of color varieties that are traditional color varieties that are APA standard breeds. And the ones we have listed are the Beltsville Small White, the Chocolate, although I'm not sure if the Chocolate is an APA standard. It was at one point. Jersey Buff as well, Lavender and Lilac, Midget White, Narragansett, White Holland, Black, Bourbon Red, Standard Bronze, Royal Palm, and Slates. So there's a good number of them, and turkeys these days come in almost every color under the rainbow, and they can be a real challenge, but they can also be a real joy in raising. And I thought we'd start off talking about them. The breeds are really variable, and the great thing is there's a color and a size for everybody. And for a lot of folks that have never gotten into turkeys before, there are some basics you need to understand. And, a really great beginner turkey that we like to lead people to is the Midget White. And that's because they're a little bit smaller. When you're going to process them, they're going to be somewhere around, the males will be around 13 pounds, the females will be around 8 pounds. And what they're most noted for is their personality. Everybody that has a Midget White talks about how they're dog-like, and they follow you around, and they're not very aggressive, and they're just a real delight to have around. So we think they make a really great beginner's turkey. And, you get into some of the other breeds, like the Standard Bronze, for instance, they're going to get a lot bigger, as a processed bird. You're looking at toms that can get up to 25 pounds, and, that's a big honking bird. And so you really want to feel comfortable around them and be able to handle them competently. And so, there is a wide range of sizes that are involved with the breeds. But, when you get out of the white birds, like the Midget Whites and the Beltsville Small White and the White Holland, and get into the colored varieties, they can be even more challenging because of the color. To get the right color in there so they meet the APA standard can be a bit of a challenge. And for some folks, they get into it because of that. For instance, Narragansett turkeys are notorious for being difficult to get really, really good color in them. And, they're basically supposed to be a silver bird with a gold tail. And, there are a number of color varieties of Narragansetts that come out, but really the APA standard calls for just that, silver bird, gold tail. And but it's a color that isn't the easiest to breed in. So in order to get birds of good quality, you want to get a lot of them on the ground that you can select from to make sure that you've got that color in place. And so once you've decided on what's your experience level and what kind of challenges do you want, the next thing is to try and source good quality animals. And the best way that we offer for folks to find good quality stock is to get onto the breeder's directory and look for individuals that are breeding these animals, and then, call them or visit them and see what it is that they select their birds for. Question number one, do they meet APA standard? And question number two, are you selecting for productivity? And, you really want to question the folks that you're getting the animals from, because, you're going to put a lot of investment into these animals. You know, heritage turkey poults are averaging maybe $7 to $9 per bird, you know, as a poult. And so that can be a big investment for you. And so you really want to know what you're getting ahead of time. A lot of folks, you know, sometimes get disappointed with hatchery birds because they might not get as big as they originally thought they were going to be. The other thing is when you're thinking about venturing into turkeys, the availability of the proper feed, you know, you can't feed them chicken feed. And they require a much higher level of protein as they're growing out. And if you don't feed them that, you're going to be sorely disappointed by your grow out. And so, you know, even before you get the poults, you want to see, do you have the ability to get the right kind of food for them? And the other thing is if you are planning to process, I mean, you've probably said it time and time again, processing's really hard to find these days, you know, especially USDA certified processing. And so you really want to check and make sure that you've got processing in the area if you're intending on growing these animals out for the holidays.
Just to clarify, they can, well, of course, we want them to be a member by all means, but I think isn't your list of breeders on the website?
Yeah, it's free on the website. Anybody can look at it. Only members can post on there, but anybody can look at the breeders directory on the website. And I believe on our website we also have a list of hatcheries as well.
That's wonderful. And so if they're interested in, and like I said, it's I was telling some folks on I think it must have been on the radio show last week that and I was telling somebody there at the ALBC conference that when we were talking about the growth of this movement in the backyard poultry, including turkeys and ducks and chickens and everything else, is that back in, I want to say it was 2008, was it 5 years ago, I think, that hatcheries were talking about, you know, they would tell all their customers, hey, order early. There's going to be a shortage. We know this because of the demand. We need to order early. And people just thought it was an advertising ploy to get, you know, pre-orders or what have you. But then when they went to order, like the week before Easter, then they were like, sorry, it's you know, 12 weeks before we can get this out to you because you should have ordered back in November or December when we asked you to because of this issue. And so even though if you choose to, and you're going down that route maybe in 2013 to process and grow your own turkeys, then look, you know, you're looking at possibly getting either hatching eggs coming up in the spring or getting your poults in the spring towards summer, so they'll be ready to and ready for you around Thanksgiving, Christmas, and the holiday season. So now, you know, now it is not too early, though, if people think it's getting cold and Thanksgiving, Christmas, at least to start doing research and picking your breeds and even getting the order in so you're guaranteed to get the ones that you want.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that actually can extend out to some of the more rare chicken breeds as well. This is the time of year you start making connections with folks and getting on lists because heritage is hot now, and they aren't kidding. It is not a marketing ploy to say that, you know, order early. You know, we get so many people that call the office disappointed because they can't find turkey poults and you know, hear the story time and time again. So, yeah, order early for sure. And, you know, and then the other thing to think about, you know, once you get the turkeys, brooding turkeys is a bit different from brooding chicks in that they're, you know, poults aren't the sharpest tool in the shed, and so they need a little more attention paid to them when first right. In the brooder, and you want to really make sure that they know where the food and the water is and that they're eating. And the other thing is that it's not a good idea to have hot and cold spots in a turkey brooder. You really want a nice, even heat across the entire brooder because turkey poults, sometimes they'll get chilled if they go off in a corner where, you know, the heat's not the strongest and they just don't have sense enough to go back towards the heat, at least not when they're little. And so it's really important that, you know, your brooder is draft-free and that it's evenly heated so that the birds don't get chilled at all. And poults can be kind of delicate. You know, they're not quite as robust as chicks are. You know, it seems like chicks, once you dip their, you know, their beak in the water and show them where the food are, you know, they can take off from there, and they know how to thermoregulate by going close to the heat or away from the heat. And turkeys aren't quite as smart as that, or I don't know if it's a matter of intelligence, but they don't have the instinct like the chicks do. And so they do need to have attention paid to them much more closely. And it's also super important to keep them clean. They're much more sensitive to bacteria and ammonia buildup than chicks are. And so, you know, you really want that even heat, but a place where they're going to also stay really nice and clean. And it seems like once you get the poults up by the 8-week or 10-week mark, they really start to come into their own. And by then, you know, the tough part seems to be over until you transition to pasture. But
Frank Reese was there, of course, and I'm guessing he. And I'm in his site now. I'm going to post it in the chat room for people that may not be familiar with the Good Shepherd Poultry Ranch and with Heritage Poultry. And I'm not sure to be exactly what he does, but would he be one of the resources if you were interested in raising some heritage breed turkeys for, say, Thanksgiving?
Yeah, but, I mean, certainly Frank has some great stock. But he does not ship, so if you want him bad enough, you need to travel out to Kansas to get him. From a welfare approved, he's not allowed to ship chicks. So, you know, that's a consideration. And, I mean, I do know a load of people that will travel out to Kansas to get him. You know, matter of fact, last time I was there, there was a gentleman from Virginia that had drove all the way up, you know, drove almost 24 hours straight to get over there. And he was happy as could be, though, when he left with those really nice turkeys.
And he was. That's super. Okay, I posted that link in the chat room for people weren't familiar with him or his work. So, perfect.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we've talked about, you know, brooding and breed selection. And then the next thing that really takes some finesse is getting the birds ready to go outside and on pasture. And this is a time where, you know, the animal's immune systems are still, you know, not 100%. And there are some things, you know, in the soil, like the organisms that cause blackhead and other things. And so, you know, you don't want to just throw them out on pasture immediately. What a lot of folks do is what they call sun porches, where they'll allow the birds, once they're fully feathered, you know, give them limited access outside so they can get the fresh air and sunshine, but not on the ground just yet. And so you've got them up off the ground, but they can go out and start getting used to the environment out there. And then slowly you can begin to transition them in pasture. And, you know, the great thing about turkeys is they will come back to their coops at night, just like chickens do. If you've got the, I'm still still dragging for the coffee.
Absolutely.
So long as you've got appropriate perching for them and they feel comfortable in their coop, they're going to go in at night. Turkeys do like to perch, so you're definitely going to have enough perch space for each of the birds. And, you know, I think it's minimum maybe 10 inches of perch per bird within the coop so that everybody's got their own space to get up on. And, they like to perch really high, but, you know, you can go maybe 30 inches off the ground and that'll probably make them happy. And, the nice thing, though, is once you get turkeys out, transition to pasture, they can really start foraging quite a bit of their own food and cut your food bill considerably. Not 100%. You know, your birds still are going to need food, but when they get out on pasture and they start to forage, you know, they can cut their feed intake by maybe 30%, which is quite a bit, you know, and maybe even more depending on the quality of your pasture and the forage. But a lot of folks get into turkeys to purposely put in fields of crops to use as integrated pest control, because the only bug a turkey's not going to eat is the one it can't catch. So they're wonderful for integrated pest control. So for folks that are having cut flower gardens or crops that aren't so delicate that the birds will hurt it, but they do really great in orchards. They would, do great in cornfields. But they, they can be very useful birds. And the thing we try to tell folks is, if you can get services out of these animals while they're growing up, that's just a better return, all the better return for you. So, think about how the turkeys can work for you while they're out there foraging. And they're certainly going to fertilize your fields for you. And but they can also turn compost and as I said, be great pest control. So the other thing you're going to need to think about as you're growing these heritage turkeys out is that they take a bit longer to grow out. They're going to take at least 28 weeks to grow out. So if you're planning to grow them for the holidays, you really need to plan early to make sure they're at the right age for processing. And a lot of folks will get their birds late in the season and then are sorely disappointed when Thanksgiving comes around and their birds aren't quite ready.
Right.
Yeah. So planning is everything when it comes to, growing out the turkeys. And, we do have a couple of really great resources on our website. If you go into the educational materials section, and we have two publications that are free for download. One's called How to Raise Heritage Turkeys on Pasture. And so it kind of goes over all the things we're talking about today, from breed selection to feed to transitioning to pasture, and then, fencing and health promotion and all kinds of good stuff. And then we also have a new publication called Selecting Your Best Turkeys for Breeding. And that's for the folks that want to take it to the next level. And so say, okay, you've raised your turkeys for the holiday market, it works for you, and now you want a bit more control with what kind of birds you're getting and where they're coming from. And so maybe think about raising a breeding flock. And that really is a huge step for folks, because you're going to be putting a lot of investment into that flock to be able to develop a flock of quality animals, and that means putting, a lot of animals on the ground, making some really good, educated choices on which animals you're going to keep. And then the book that we have really is great for helping you to understand what does a good turkey look like. And it's not rocket science, but it is something you have to pay attention to and think on quite a bit.
What are some hey, little man. Little man's joining me, my co-host for today, Caleb. You mentioned the midget whites. What are some other breeds? And you may have mentioned one or two in there that people, if they want to be all about, the ALBC and the heritage breeds and protecting some, maybe they're not comfortable starting out with something that's more rare and spending the money for that if they're not experienced. But what are some of the other turkey breeds that might interest some folks that may be doing this for the first time?
Well, one that's really popular that a lot of beginners get into is the Bourbon Red, and even the blacks. The blacks are pretty easy. Standard Bronze, you can get pretty decent birds out there with those three varieties. Now, these guys are a little bit bigger than the midget whites, but they're a little more common, and there are more people working with them, and so the likelihood of you finding some good quality poults is higher. There are some others that, are available, but if you're looking for the ones that most people get started with, it's probably going to be the Bourbon Red and the Standard Bronze. And the Bourbon Reds are neat because they're this beautiful kind of mahogany red color, and just their name kind of lends itself to, marketing a story with the birds. And, they were developed in Bourbon County, Kentucky and named for their color, which is supposed to resemble the, you know, bourbon liquor. And they're doing very well in the consumer market. I mean, all the heritage breeds are doing quite well with consumers. And, you know, the thing is, if you can establish yourself as a person that is marketing good quality birds, they're going to sell themselves. I mean, a lot of folks are taking orders for their turkeys as early as, like, June, July, and August, you know, and they're sold out pretty quickly. You know, putting some time and effort into your endeavor will really pay off in the long run. And, you know, and the birds can give you a good return, especially if you've got good foraging opportunities for them. Now, for the folks that are planning on just feeding them grain and that's it, you know, and maybe don't have the pasture to raise them, you're going to have to charge more, and that might be an obstacle if you don't happen to be near good, you know, places with good markets.
That was a couple of questions I wanted to ask. We've had some shows specifically on turkeys in the past, but we can pick your brain as well for those who are listening today or will listen to the archive of this show and may not have listened or will find the other show in the past. But for those who are sitting there going, okay, well, you know, I'd love to do this. I've got one pen that's pretty big. Could the turkeys and the chickens share the same run, even if I could get another small coop or a makeshift coop for the turkeys and keep them separate that way? Could the chickens and turkeys share the same area?
Well, I know a lot of people that do, and I think it varies on the individuals, because some toms can be, you know, somewhat aggressive to other birds. And I think typically they'll leave them alone, but if it's a small enclosed area, that could be a different story. And with the toms getting up, you know, over 20 pounds, they're gonna pound a chicken into the ground pretty easily. But you know, for the most part, they're pretty peaceful and they should get along, just provided there's, you know, enough places that they can get away from each other. I'd also say visual barriers are always a good thing, and I kind of, you know, for visual barriers, a real easy one is like a couple of pallets that are nailed together in a triangle, and so birds can get on top of them to get away, or birds can get, you know, on the side of them to get away from birds on the other side of the triangle, or they can go underneath and get away from other birds, and so giving plenty of opportunities for birds to get away from each other is always going to be helpful.
Perfect. And of course, you talked about the food requirements. Obviously, higher protein, like maybe a flock raiser or just something for a game bird starter, game bird raiser, something much higher in protein than, say, your average laying pellets or even your chick starter.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think minimum you want 28% protein. I know that some folks are feeding them as high as 32% protein. But that's also early in life. As they get older, they don't need quite as much protein as they grow, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there are different levels of protein as they grow. And it might be helpful if you go to the website and look at our turkey manual. We've got a number of sample feed rations that are out there that Good Shepherd Ranch was kind enough to share with us. And you can kind of see the formulations they use. And, you know, like I'm looking at their starter, and their starter is, you know, the protein somewhere around 28%. And, you know, and then you've got the first level of grower where it goes down to like 24%, and then their turkey finisher will be somewhere around 18%. So, you know, it's just in those early weeks, probably like the first 8 to 10 weeks, that they have that really high level of protein.
The couple of questions in the chat room. What about turkeys free-ranging and joining wild flocks, flying off, running off, kind of like the guinea fowl? They'll just kind of leave. Or if you're going to try to free-range, are turkeys pretty good about hanging around?
Well, I know that a lot of folks have talked about, you know, wild toms trying to steal hens from domestic flocks or flying in. So, you know, it's definitely a consideration. You know, the best fence for a turkey is good food, and if they feel comfortable and have all of the needs catered to, then that certainly is helpful in keeping the birds in. But, you know, it's definitely a concern. If you have a very large turkey population in your area, then certainly you're going to want a taller fence, I imagine, or, you know, maybe have a guardian dog that'll possibly keep the birds out, or a guardian donkey or something like that. But, yeah, it can be a concern, and it does happen on occasion. Typically, though, if the domestic turkeys get out into the wild, they typically don't last very long because they're not quite as fast as the wild turkeys. And certainly if a domestic tom gets out, their days are limited because they're pretty easy to, for a fox or coyote, get pretty easily. The hens, they might be able to survive a bit, but you know, again, they're heavier. They're not as agile as the wild turkey, so they're going to be easier targets.
Another question. Did you say it was earlier 38 weeks before harvest? Or
28.
28 weeks, okay. Because
yeah.
Christmas Chick in the chat room was like, what's the best age to sell them really to make the most money? And I'm assuming when they're at their peak size, hopefully right before the Thanksgiving or Christmas holiday, I'm guessing?
Yeah, well, it's at that 28-week level. You know, you could grow them bigger, but then you run into the problem of, all right, you're feeding them for a longer period of time, so your return is going to be diminished. And also, they get real big real fast, and trying to market like a 25-pound carcass is going to be really hard. You know, most folks don't want birds quite that big. So,
and I guess your expense, too, and profit would go down because of the extra week's care fee that you're having them. It may not make up for the additional price.
That's correct. And also the marketability will diminish because your birds will then get too big, and it's really hard to sell. You might sell a few, but there are not that many people out there that can fit a bird that big in the oven. So,
and then, you know, how many, you know, a lot of people have big families, but that's an awful big family to feed. Do you process them pretty much the same way as, again, the chickens, as far as the culling process, the scalding process, the plucking process, and then, preparing them, as far as the culling process, when you do that?
I think they'd be similar. You know, you're going to fast for 24 hours before, going to the processor. The big thing with turkeys that's different from the chickens, although, you know, it's important with chickens too, but, you know, because you've got so much of an investment in with the turkeys, it pays to take extra attention in putting the birds into the transport carriers and then getting them out. They can bruise very easily, and when you're marketing whole birds for the holiday market and you've got a bruised wing that's cut off, there aren't too many people that are going to want to serve a one-winged bird on their table for Thanksgiving. And so it's really, really important to take extra care to make sure that the, you know, head in first, head out first, and, you know, just, you know, take the extra time it takes to make sure those birds don't get bruised when they're going in the crates.
Okay, perfect. I was just looking at the calendar, 28 weeks, you know, that's, seven months. So if you're looking at, April, really? It's April, May, June, July, August, September, October, and November. You're really, really starting to talk about them in April and May, getting them and getting them started if you're going to process them and have them ready by Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's why, you know, plan ahead. And, I mean, people are still selling poults after that time, but they won't be ready until Christmas or maybe New Year's or after. And then, you know, your market's gone by then. So, you know, planning ahead is you know, it's nothing to play with. You really need to understand the timing and all this.
I saw a cartoon yesterday of a turkey talking to a chicken and talking to a duck, and the turkey was saying, "None of us are safe. I heard that she's making a turducken this season." That was a cute cartoon.
Well, interestingly, the ducks and the geese aren't the timing's a bit different from them, and you're actually aiming for after Thanksgiving or very close to the process, because you're looking for good fat buildup on, you know, in your geese and your turkey, geese and ducks, because, you know, that fat equates to the flavor and also to all the goodies you can make after the holidays. And you know, I made the mistake of processing my geese last year early, and I did them the beginning of November. And although they came out good, I was happy with the meat proportions. There was hardly any fat on them. And going back and talking to Frank Reese about it, he's like, "Well, yeah, we don't process the geese until, you know, it gets really cold outside and that they've developed a nice layer of fat on them." So, you know, live and learn, and we're doing that with my ducks this year. This year we did ducks instead of geese, and so, you know, the cold weather is starting to get here, and we'll probably process them in the next several weeks now that it's cold, and, you know, they're building up a nice fat layer, and we'll be ready for processing.
That's perfect. Well, I've got 1 o'clock right on the dot, and we don't want to take more of your time than we deserve. So we want to say thank you very much for coming on today. I know you're tired, and we hope you recuperate nicely. And thank you so much for putting on such a great annual conference. I look forward to attending next year as well. It was really inspiring, really great. Love the guest speaker, the founder of the Seed Savers Exchange. That was fabulous and really inspiring, and really opened the eyes to when she quoted, you know, 4,800 apple trees that are no longer in existence because their seeds are gone. It's just amazing. And her passion for that, just like the ALB's passion on the animal side of it and saving the heritage breed. So great works. I will tell everybody the website again, but we'll let you go. And then let me look at my calendar here. It looks like maybe December the 11th is the second Tuesday of December. So we'll look forward to having you back on December 11th.
Well, great. Pleasure being on, as always, and take care.
Great. Thank you very, very much for joining us. That's Jeanette Berenger with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Please visit their website. They do great works in preserving these wonderful heritage breeds. www.albc-usa.org. That's www.albc-usa.org. Check them out, folks. They're really a great group of folks. We'll return. I just remember two really special announcements. It's more, even more exciting when we come back right after this short break. Thanks for staying with us.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
No matter how much we pamper our chickens, no matter how often we clean our coops, there is always that chance they will get mites and lice. If they do, you want to treat them as naturally as possible. Poultry Protector from Carefree Enzymes uses all-natural enzymes to eliminate the mites and lice from your coop, nesting boxes, and chickens with no egg withdrawal period. My chickens don't always have mites and lice, but when they do, I prefer Poultry Protector from CarefreeEnzymes.com. Happy flocking, my friends.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry,
from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
All righty, we appreciate Jeanette Behringer with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy coming on today for our special guest segment today.
Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us. Let's see, I know I've got at least two cool announcements, if I can remember them. Then I thought about maybe having a third. So, but since y'all are talking about it in the chat room, I had a great conversation over the weekend up at the conference with John Metzer of Metzer Ducks and Game Birds. And we were talking about incubation when I was teaching incubation in our workshop, and when we took a break in the class, he came up. We were talking about it, about how him being a professional commercial hatchery, and he of course talks and networks with a lot of the other big major hatcheries that hatch millions of chicks and ducks every year. He was talking about, and I'm gonna discuss this with him in a future contact. But he was talking about applying this to even the novice person that likes to incubate, whether it be with a GQF Genesis or one of the Brinsey advanced units. But that he says that there's been studies, and this is what they do, and a lot of the major hatcheries, and this will be a study that I'll work on. Maybe we can have some people on to talk about this specifically that do this for a living with millions of chicks. But they basically put everything in the incubator, okay, that hold thousands of eggs, and they do not open that sucker for 10 days. Because they're showing studies that at the beginning of the hatch, the first 7 to 10 days, that they're getting a better percentage of a hatch by increasing or actually starting with a little bit higher temperature as well, say maybe 100.3 or 100.5, starting with a little bit higher temperature in the beginning, not opening up the incubator for the first 10 days and having an actually much higher, you're going to help me with this because I always get this confused, I want to say carbon monoxide or is it carbon dioxide? I'm horrible at that since elementary school, but a higher carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide level in that incubator up to about 10 days before they even open that incubator, because they're showing starting the hatch carbon dioxide. Thank you. They're starting the hatch at a little bit higher temperature. Okay, maybe 100.3, 100.5, and then not opening to do anything for the first 8 to 10 days, and really the numbers that he had, carbon dioxide was tremendous that build up in that incubator. Okay, and then actually reducing it towards the very end, the last few days, even down to like maybe the mid 90s. 93 to 95 regarding the temperature. And so we had a great technical talk about incubation regarding that. And let me share this with you too. This is very interesting as well. He also talked about, and this, and we'll just have a whole, maybe a whole show in the future about incubation and some of the newer techniques that some of these professional hatcheries are using, including starting them higher temperature and then going lower temperature towards the end, getting a high carbon dioxide inside and not even touching them and letting that high carbon dioxide build. But also, he talked about, normally you don't keep eggs a long time, you know, but if you happen to be like the home hatcher, the hobbyist, and you're collecting eggs over a period of time, let's say 12 days, really it'll take about 12 days for that hen, if you think about it, out in the wild or in your backyard, that the hen normally will lay a clutch of eggs and then basically go broody and sit on them, or go broody as she's laying and then sits on them. But so she's got so as you're collecting eggs for the next 10 or 12 days, you have your eggs stored in kind of a room temperature. You don't want them too cold or too hot. The embryo starts to grow at 86 degrees. So obviously somewhere around in the 50 or 60 degree mark, not cold like in the refrigerator. Okay, so you have your eggs stored there, and maybe in a little basket, waiting for you to collect enough eggs to put and set in the incubator for your hatch. Okay, well, he talked about this as well, which is very interesting, that a lot of the companies that are holding on to thousands of eggs will actually heat them up every 3 or 4 days a little bit before hatch. And the premise there goes back to nature. If you think about it, the hen will come and lay an egg, and then she'll go out and forage and scratch and whatever. Then she'll come back the next day, lay another egg, and then she'll have 6 eggs there, and then she'll come back and sit on them. And while she's sitting on them laying that other egg, all the eggs seem to get warmer. So they're also studying and using this theory. If they're holding on to thousands of eggs waiting for, and most of them will set eggs every 7 days. So, but if you're waiting longer than that, they will actually take the eggs that they're holding on to, and they will increase the temperature a little bit, just as if a broody hen was coming back to lay, say, the 10th egg that day, or the 11th egg, or the 8th egg, and she'll sit on that nest of, say, 6, 7, 8 eggs every day while she's laying, and it heats all those eggs up under her for temporary, and then she goes back and scratches her roost or whatever until she has her nest. So they're also looking at that technology to, if you're holding on to eggs for some time until you have enough to set in the incubator, to actually maybe every third day heating them up just a little bit, just a little bit, to maintain them, and that acts kind of more like what Mama Hen does out in nature. So it was a fascinating talk with John Metzer with Metzer Farms and Hatchery. What a great conversation. So we talked about that. Very, very interesting, and scientific information goes into this hatching. We also talked about how I thought it's always funny when we talk to folks that hatch their own, and they're like, oh, I'm so disappointed. I had 75% hatch rate. That's tremendous. You should be patting yourself on the back, jumping up and ground. I know a lot of people get all ticked off. Well, I set 28 and only 25 hatch, so I'm really kind of disappointed with myself. Are you out of your mind? Every hatcher we've ever had on the radio show, the McMurray, the Ideal Poultry, the Mount Healthy, Metzer, I just talked with him this weekend, you know, hatching millions and millions of chicks every year, hundreds of thousands in some cases if they're a little bit smaller. You know, all of them have said that, hey, we're happy, we're thrilled, we're satisfied with, you know, 72%, 78%. Maybe sometimes we'll get maybe 85%, but that's on a rare hatch. But with the numbers we're hatching, we're pretty happy with 75 to 80% hatch rate. But it's so funny when you hear people say, oh, you know, I set 12 eggs and only 8 hatched. I'm really bummed and disappointed. You know, so but hey, that's not bad. 9 out of 12. Come on, pat yourself on the back. So it's pretty interesting how these big major hatcheries are pretty content, even with how all the advancements in technology they have, and are pretty happy with 75 to 80% hatch rate. And if it's a little less, you know, hey, so be it. So that was an interesting talk. Okay, let me tell you a little bit about this next. I'm so excited. I talked about this last week, but it is set in stone now. So you're definitely going to want to mark your calendars. Definitely going to want to mark your calendars. Thursday, November the 29th, that is 1 week after Thanksgiving, okay? Thursday, November the 29th, I am definitely going to be very honored to welcome Dr. Bruce Charlton, PhD, poultry scientist, world-renowned. Okay, I'm very excited. He is going to be coming on the radio show, again, Thursday, November 29th. He's out of UC Davis out in California. He is a professor out there. I will have all of his credentials to brag about here as soon as he sends them to me. But we have officially booked that he's coming on the show November 29th, and this is the show where he is going to walk us through. I can't do it video. I can't do it. He's in California. I'm in Georgia. This time, maybe in the future, we'll do a video of a real live necropsy, okay, or necropsy, depending on where you're from. But he is going to walk us through. He'll join us on the radio show, and he is actually going to walk us through step by step from the time I walk into the poultry lab and meet him face-to-face with my deceased bird and say, look, these are the symptoms that my bird had. I walked out this morning and it is dead. I really want to know what's wrong, so I need to know if I need to treat my existing flock, quarantine them, whatever the case may be. I need to know what caused the death of this bird. And he is going to walk through step by step, from the time I walk into the poultry lab with my dead bird to the time he writes his report, he's going to go through basically step by step of a necropsy, first time ever, live on the radio. And tell us how and what goes into this. So when he's examining the crop, well, I'm gonna cut here. I'm gonna look in the crop. I'm gonna look for this, look for that. I'm looking at the gizzard. I'm looking at the liver. I'm looking at the intestines. I'm looking at the stomach. I'm looking at the heart. I'm looking at the digestive tract. And what am I looking for? What should I see? What do I actually see? What are some things that I'll see that I shouldn't see? All these, looking at the body, the weight of the bird, and the thought process that's going on with a necropsy. So very, very honored to have Dr. Bruce Charlton, that's confirmed, will be coming on. I'm looking at an email from him right now. That's the Thursday, November the 29th, and the outline of the necropsy steps, and in fact, he sent me an outline of those. Review the clinical history and consider all likely diagnoses. Examine the exterma and observe the clinical signs of the bird. If the bird is alive, pay particular attention to abnormalities in the hocks, tendon, sheaths, eyes, and mouth. Check carefully for external parasites. All these things he's going to go through when he examines the bird and actually performs the necropsy on this bird. So I'm very, very honored. It's going to be a great show, so make sure you actually tune in for that show. I'll be promoting it a whole lot. That's the 29th of November. I worked really hard getting this done, and it's actually come to play, so I'm very excited myself to have this done. It'll be the first time ever on this show after 4 years of broadcasting, and maybe the first time ever a necropsy is going to be kind of described step by step on live on the radio show. So I think it'll be great for everybody to listen. And so if you have to take your bird, you know kind of what's going to happen. You know what's going on. You know what they're looking for and how scientific this is as they play detective to figure out what's wrong with your bird. So I wanted to make that announcement as well. And, of course, I'll be promoting that on Facebook and Twitter. Also, I'm very excited and very pleased and proud and honored that yesterday, it's been a kind of a done deal for a couple of weeks now, but yesterday I sent over the official contract for my premier sponsorship with Tractor Supply, and a lot of great things are involved in this. I will be writing a monthly article for their Out There magazine, or to be used in their Out There magazine or on their website, a monthly article related to chickens. Won't be that long, but it'll be a good informational article, which is included in that. I'll also be doing two webinars with them per year. There will be one webinar done in the spring around Chick Days, and there'll be one webinar done in the fall. Obviously, the Chick Days will pretty much be getting started with backyard poultry. The webinar we'll be doing with Tractor Supply in the fall will be kind of preparing for winter and different diet requirements and things like that. So we're really looking forward to that. And then we're going to be talking. Oh, also so we got the two webinars. We've got the articles, of course, all the advertising with the radio show and the tour. But the tour, I'm really most excited about. It's going to be really terrific. We've worked in a tour every single quarter, so that's
four tours a year. And I'm already, for example, in April, I've already booked three events that aren't associated with the Tractor Supply Tour. So we travel a lot, regardless of these four tours that we booked with Tractor Supply. But we're definitely looking forward to this. Once a quarter, without a doubt, we'll be taking a week-long tour, maybe a little longer, maybe a 10-day tour, depending on where we go, what part of the country we visit. And we'll be stopping at, of course, Tractor Supply stores throughout the country. We'll be broadcasting the radio show live, and we'll be doing our chicken workshops. We'll do book signings, questions and answers, pictures, photographs, autographs, things like that. So we're really, really, really looking forward to that and working with Tractor Supply as our premier sponsor. So thank you to Tractor Supply for that. And I look forward to, one of the best parts of being on the road is I really look forward to meeting you, the fans. How awesome is that when we pull up and we get to meet you, talk you face-to-face, give you a big, big bear hug. Thank you for listening to the show. Thanks for being a fan and then talking with you. And we hope to, as always, stop by some of our fans' houses, our fans' properties, our fans' farms, and see their operation, visit with them, talk with them, see their coops, maybe do some videos of that as well. So we're definitely looking forward to that. Speaking of Nashville, there in the chat room, I am going to be heading up to Nashville before the end of the year. I sent them over an email, actually to Brentwood, where the TSC headquarters is. And I'm looking at maybe the 17th and 18th of December, but we'll have to see, because I've got to meet with a lot of people up there in many different departments to see how they're going to utilize this relationship with the Tractor Supply and the Chicken Whisperer. So definitely looking forward to that. But that's huge, and I'm really oh, and by the way, sometime in 2013, I will be going to Michigan. I have so many fans in Michigan. I'm not sure how I'm going to get there, what route or anything like that, but I've got to sometime in 2013 get up to Michigan, because I have tons and tons and tons of fans up there. I can assure you it won't be the first quarter, because it'll be snowy in winter and cold and yucky up there, but maybe in the spring, maybe summer, we're going to head up to and try to get to the Michigan area, because I've got tons of fans up there. They're always saying, come to Michigan. I'll be planning a trip to Florida, and they'll say, you know, Michigan's on the way. From Georgia. I'm going from Georgia to Florida, or Georgia to Alabama, and they'll say, well, Michigan is on the way. So you give me such a hard time. So I'll definitely be getting up to Michigan. I'd like to get up into the Northeast as well and visit some great fans up that way. And, of course, out west. I'm not sure when, but I would love to schedule a West Coast. Now, that would probably be a good long 2-week tour, if not longer, but at least 2 weeks. And so that'll really have to work out a lot of planning, especially if we go down 10 into California to Texas, California, up to like Washington, up in that area, because we do have a lot of fans on the West Coast as well. And we just can't get up there. Yeah. And Bard Rock says, come on up here and meet some of these damn Yankees. Hey, no, y'all are Yankees because y'all live up there. Everybody knows that the dang Yankees actually come down, visit, and stay. They never go back. Everybody knows that, right? So y'all aren't dang Yankees because y'all live up there. Y'all stay up there. You've become dang Yankees if you came down and then stayed and didn't go back. I think that's what they say, right, about the dang Yankees? No, I definitely want to get up there to the Northeast. Got a lot of fans up there. Bard Rock's up there. I think Ralph's up there. I believe, you know, let's see, Walter's up there. Walter, how you's guys doing up there towards the Jersey and whatnot? So, no, definitely want to travel the country and meet all you great folks and all my fans. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. The Fan Farm says, does that make me a dang Yankee? Well, I don't know. Did you move down here and stay and not go home? Oh, my goodness. Got to love it. Love everybody. Hey, thank you very much for tuning in today. And one last reminder, I'm so excited. In fact, I'm going to, as soon as I sign off, I'm picking up the telephone and start calling more sponsors. Still working on having a tremendous Black Australorp Friday event. Nope, not Black Friday. Everybody's heard of Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. Huge mammoth discount sales on all the things that you love. No, this is going to be Black Australorp Friday, a huge sales event that's probably going to last all weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Huge deep discounts on things that you love from all of our sponsors that are going to participate. So I will be working on that, and hopefully by next week, Monday and Tuesday, I will have some definitely deals that are going to be going on sale on Black Australorp Friday. here with Backyard Poultry. With Black Osterwart Friday. How cool is that? And so discounts, I know First State Vet Supply, My Pet Chicken. Let's see. We've got Brentsy's going to be there. I said My Pet Chicken and many others. So I just got to get on the phone, contact them. I sent out all the emails yesterday about the event and have them thinking about ideas of what they're going to do. Coops possibly at huge discounts on coops. We're just going to have to see. But I think it's going to be awesome. It's never been done before as far as I know. A chicken-related Black Friday event that we're calling Black Osterwart Friday, which will be the day after Thanksgiving. You can shop from the comfort of your own home by visiting our sponsors' websites and making those orders. Some will be coupon code related. You'll have to enter the code. Some will not. They're just going to discount the price on their website. We'll tell you about it. You can go there and you can purchase. But they, hopefully, and I'm working with them, these will be things that you need, things that you want, not just things to say, oh, this is on sale. But we've gotten things from our Facebook page, heated waterers, heated water base. We want some metal decorative signs. We want all kinds of health products. That was a big one. Probiotics, Oxine from Peter Brown and First State Vet Supply. They're going to be participating in Black Osterwart Friday as well. Maybe his health kit, maybe the medicine kit, even though it's already a great deal at $24.95, maybe that'll be discounted just for this weekend. Maybe even we'll offer some gift certificates so you can get those and send them and do stocking stuffers. Maybe a few chicken toys for, you know, $2, $5, $8 chicken toys that you can put in the stockings for your chicken loved one. So really looking forward to that coming up next week. Black Osterwart Friday. Only here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Thank you so much for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Blog Talk Radio for another great episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Have a great day, everybody. God bless, and we'll see you tomorrow. Oh.